had Martin Luther King not been killed, I certainly would say there would be a lot more organized activity towards peace and civil rights. I certainly feel that way. A lot of people say one man is not that important. I hear people say that about Cesar Chavez. Oh, the Union would survive whether Cesar Chavez was here or not. And I certainly disagree with that. And I think Martin Luther King's death is absolute proof that one person does generate that. One special type of kind of person. Because I don't feel that very few people will make the sacrifices that Martin Luther King, the personal sacrifices that Martin Luther King and Cesar Chavez are willing to do. You just don't, the individuals are just not made like that every day. That's all there is to it. And it doesn't happen. And I certainly hope that nothing ever happens to Cesar, that he manages to stay out of the harm's way. His dog died, you know, both his dogs died. He no longer has his guard. He no longer has his guard dog. What was his name? Boycott and... What was the dog's name? They got old and died. And I don't think he has new dogs trained to take their place. He had a lot of faith in his dogs. I don't know.
What were you doing during
the watch riots? During the watch riots, I was sick in bed. I was in bed for about a year. I had something, hepatitis and mono and something else combined. I don't think they ever knew what I had. All the doctor could tell me was each time they gave me a different medicine, I got worse. So I ended up just staying in bed for about a year. I sure was. I was sick. I remember that shocked the hell out of me because, geez, I used to be all over Watts. I certainly wasn't expecting it. Of course, there had not been a lot of, that's why they had the Watts riots. There hadn't been a lot of civil rights activity and stuff in the Watts area before the riots. I remember the Watts riots in that Jolene's mother and father had a little store over here on the corner of 6th and Vernon, and they came over to stay at our house. Because they couldn't, they were afraid to stay there. But as it ended up, the store never was damaged. There's a little here and there. I think that was just a bunch of, they really didn't know what the riot was all about.
When you say there wasn't much civil rights activity in Washington,
well, I think at that time, that was UCRC wasn't working Watts anymore. Maybe that's what I mean. United Civil Rights, the thing I was with was not, had not been, I can't remember why, had not been active over there.
You mean most of the demonstrations and the meetings and that thing?
That just died, away. Well, I don't guess too many meetings and things were in Watts. They were more in central Los Angeles, but we did most of our door-to-door work there in Watts and Willowbrook and Compton and all in that area. Gosh, I've knocked on every door except the newer houses. I've knocked on every door in that whole area, plus East Los Angeles, too. We used to work in East Los Angeles also in voter drives. I don't know. I wish, when were the Watts riots now? 1960 what?
And that's 64.
64, yeah. I don't know. You could tell me 75 and I wouldn't argue with you because I just plain don't know. Well, that was 1963 when James Meredith did his big march there. No. We walked down to a park and watched for that thing. I remember that. That was 1963. But that was when the militants began to to organize and to make the news. I don't know how organized they were. Well, a lot of people that live in Watts that I have talked to that live there, that lived there for a long time, claim they were outside people who ran around there setting, I mean, strangers to them. They were not the people who lived there running around setting all those fires and, you know, breaking into the stores and things. Now, I don't know that many people, maybe, but I've heard that a lot of times. 65. Yeah, I was thinking it was later than that, because I remember that thing. Now, we were still working Watts, and there never were any incidents. So. Because I'm just looking at this, 1963, that's got to be when one of those marches down to. And we used to walk from the city hall down to that park there in Watts. I can't think of the name of the park either. Yeah, I don't remember, I'm sure. I can't even remember the year that Earl Walters died. I'm going to see if I can't look back and figure that out. Because after he died, the United Civil Rights, that was it. There was no more. In fact, we used to call Howard every once in a while. And he'd call me, but we never really had anything. In fact, I think I was working with another group. This friend of mine, Mayor Bradley, was talking about... Or they were talking about him being mayor, and this Autry, this friend of mine, set up this, another voter registration thing. We had a building up there, and that was the most successful, I guess, operation that I've ever been involved in. We put a registrar, and that's when you still had to have, you know, deputy registrars, in every public place in the 10th Councilmatic District. There wasn't a market, the post office, beauty shop. You'd be surprised. I've never been involved with anything that's had that much support or success. And they decided that Tom Bradley could be mayor, but he didn't make it that time, right? But he did make it later. But that certainly was. I've never seen so many volunteers in all my life. And I've never seen a place registered like that place was. And it wasn't that unregistered to begin with. You know, Bradley always had a lot of support, and his district was pretty well kept current, because I'm sure he was aiming for bigger and better things. And then he had Reverend Brookins there backing him too. But that's the first extremely successful. There wasn't one public place there that didn't have a deputy registrar sitting in it. And I had to coordinate all that in a little old Volkswagen Bug. If you ever tried to haul a bunch of deputies, a bunch of tables and chairs in a Bug, well, you know, and I did have a little problem there. But that was really a really successful operation. I don't know whether it was because he was so popular or it was timed just right. We were amazed that we were able to find that many deputies that would come out and work, because there's a lot of public places in the 10th Council. It was a councilmatic district, I'll tell you that.
What area did that cover?
Well, I went down to, Crenshaw. That Crenshaw Shopping Center. We went over to, Pico or something up that way, because there was a lot of, what the boundaries were. I don't remember how far this way and how far the other way. I know we went way down there past Rodeo Road. There was a Crenshaw, not that big Crenshaw shopping thing that's there now, I don't think, but there was a shopping thing where we had... There was a market. We had several deputies around there. And then we did that. I believe it went past Pico, maybe past Olympic on that side.
When was this happening?
Well, I'm trying to think. I think Martin Luther King was killed during that operation. Now, I could be wrong. You remember when Martin Luther King was killed? I don't remember that date either. I was working on something in Los Angeles with some group who were out working when somebody told us. I have no... wasn't too long before that, was it? Oh, God, I hope it wasn't the same year. How did we survive? It wasn't. They were close together, I guess. That thing about my... that's about something else, though. When did this book come out? No, he's helping Chicago youth. 1963. I think that's when they were doing that, working that, taking over those abandoned tenement houses and apartment buildings or whatever the hell.
After the West Side, were you involved at all in the rebuilding process in the community?
No, I was working with the farm workers. That really shocked me. I don't really think they've done that much in Watts since then. I don't know. I haven't spent that much time over there. I really don't. But not too long. A few years back, a lot of the burnt-out buildings were still, you know, you could tell where they were burnt. Then the poverty program came along, I guess. I don't know whether they really ever did anything in Watts or not. I don't think so, because the poverty program has been very ineffective as far as dealing with the problems of poverty. They had that job training thing there. I don't... taken people over to that in the past. I don't know whether it was a very successful thing or not. I don't know. I mean, it's sort of like CETA. It makes a lot of noise, but nothing really happens. You know, it's a lot of publicity. It makes a lot of noise. I'm not trying to, you know, run down the people's effort who are in there working. I think anything, you know, every effort should be appreciated, and I'm sure that it is by me. But it would be nice, if, especially when we spend large, large sums of money, that the people living in that area would be able to feel and see the difference, not someone outside telling how wonderful it is and how much has been accomplished. And I feel that that's very true of the poverty program. The money is all spent at the top. By the time it filters down to where the people, poor people might feel it or get some effect from it, there's really such a little bit of it, and nobody really cares whether poor people are helped or not, is the attitude I think that people have, especially the people involved in the poverty program. I'm talking about the decision makers up at the top, of course. Now, you have some very dedicated people that try to work with what little bit they have. But I would like to have a program where millions and millions of dollars are spent. I would like to have the people that are living in that area to come forward and say, yes, now, you know, actually, we do have good-paying jobs. Transportation is certainly improved. And look at all these things we have. I think about all they have to point to is, in Watts, is the Martin Luther King Jr. Hospital there. Now, that, I think, was a big accomplishment, which I think Kenneth Hahn takes credit for. And I would say that he probably deserves practically all the credit. I'm sure he's one of the few that stood there and kept on and on until actually it was a reality. I think that's a big accomplishment. And I'm sure the people that live around there would be able to tell you, yes, there was some change there. But as far as housing and jobs and other changes, I would doubt very seriously if people would say that there was a lot that had happened there. People that live there, that are involved in the problem, who are the last ones in the world to be asked to comment on anything that has to do with their welfare, their being. But I would hope that, and such large sums of money. I sometimes wonder what would have happened with the poverty program had not the Kennedys and Martin Luther King had been killed, because I do feel they were the ones whose idea, whose plan it was, and I feel that they were very sincere in implementing and making this effort to change the lives of poor people in the United States. And I really feel that, and that, you know, there's been millions and millions of dollars spent on that. But I don't feel that it's made any impact. It was spent, but it was not spent in the poverty communities, and I think that that's where the sorry part comes in. And although we get poverty funds, we get federal poverty money to run this place, I'll still say the same thing. Most of that money was wasted. I think, wasted in a sense that it was stolen. It was spent at the top. And there you have, well, we still have the same thing here. The city and the county, it takes the city and the county to administer this federal poverty money. Now, by the time they get their administration costs out of it, there's nothing left to administer to the poor in the community. There's really nothing there. So I don't know. It's kind of a sad situation.
When did you begin to get involved with the funding?
I think the movement was, well, actually, the Caesar had been involved before that. I think it was 8 months old. Mrs. Lewis, you know, my friend, carried the flag into Sacramento that day, on that march. She went on that march. I don't remember why I didn't go on that march. I didn't go. I don't recall why now.
What year was this? Is that a bad question?
It's a bad question. God, is the farm workers... I think I read somewhere in something I was looking at, it's about 14 or 15 years. Well, we consider the beginning of the farm workers movement when they marched to Sacramento, of course. That's what I'm dating back from. But as I say, it was there before that, or Caesar never would have had that many people to march to Sacramento. You know, he certainly had been busy before that. But everybody dates I thought it said 14 or 15 years. Now, that seems like an awful long time, although... Yeah. I think 65 or 66. And from there on to somehow I got teamed up with Caesar's cousin, Susie Villalobos, and we were hauling stuff. I think I had an old piece of a station wagon. We were hauling stuff from here. There was a very active church in East L.A. We used to haul food, and then I used to go to something over in East L.A. and get medicine, you know, drugs and medicine. That was later on, though. That was after they had their clinic up there, because I did that sometimes twice a day, as many as two trips to Delano to pick up stuff and take back. And I don't know, we used to do that. I don't know how we got started doing it.
You remember how you got started being involved with
him? Not really. Not really. Somehow, I didn't know Susie. But she and I got started hauling stuff up there. That movement was really hard, because I know one time we collected, from this priest in East L.A. collected this food, and they had a lot of cases of canned milk and I don't remember what else. We took potatoes and sugar and beans, probably. But I remember the canned milk, because they didn't have a building then in Delano. And we took this food to some kind of an old, big old barn out in a field somewhere. In fact, that as I learned later, that's where they built, you know, all that nice thing that they have there in Delano. And we went out there, and there were actually people with babies there, you know, babes in arms there, waiting for that canned milk to make their kids a bottle. Their kids were actually crying. Oh, that upset me something terrible. I made sure we got that canned milk. We kept the canned milk going after that, I'll tell you. They were actually sitting there and around this in their cars around this old big barn. And the minute that Susie drove up, everybody went running out there grabbing the canned milk and making the babies bottles. And I said, oh, my God, you know, oh, that's terrible. These are just little babies, and they're hungry. So you can only haul so much in that old station wagon I had, so we'd make two or three trips a day. Sometimes we'd be there or here coming, we used to leave here about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. I remember one time, somehow or the other, I got off the wrong off-ramp. I hate to ride the damn freeway after dark anyway. It's bad enough to see where you are in the daytime. You know, I wasn't acquainted in East L.A. at that section of East L.A. And I got off the freeway, and it was about, I used to leave here about 2, and then probably got over there by 2:30 or maybe, well, I'm sure it was around 3 this time, because I took the wrong ramp off the freeway, and I don't know where, I still don't know where I was. But you know, and I don't know who it was, I don't remember any reading the papers, any special gang activity or anything, but they just threw rocks at my car. I was, oh boy. And I'm all alone in there looking for Susie to get over there to pick up the stuff. I finally, I remember bending way down the car. Boy, I thought from both sides, they were, I still don't know where I was, but I finally wound my way out and got back up to, found a main drag that I could get myself going from, and got over there to Susie. We were very late that day. That scared the hell out of me. There I am about 3 o'clock in the morning over some strange, and I don't know who it was that was trying to do me in, but they sure were throwing rocks and sticks and things just from both sides. I don't know, all of a sudden, you know, you're driving along trying to look at the street signs, and all of a sudden something starts pounding in your car, and wow, woke me up. I moved as fast as I could. I still don't know why anybody would want to, you know, hell, I'm harmless. I look pretty harmless. But outside of that exciting thing, it wasn't, I know I had a very exciting night at Caesar's house up there in Delano. They're having a lot of trouble, a lot of threats. And I think Miss Revis and Miss Lewis was still alive. Anyway, for some reason we stayed all night there. I don't know if we got there real late or the road was closed or something. We got snowed in up there several times, so we had to stay over. But we were staying there at their house in Delano, and I remember hearing Caesar wasn't there, just telling them the kids and probably some farm workers in here and there. They always had their, you know, bodies all over the floor and sleeping bags. I was kind of lucky, though. They always give Miss Reeves, she's older, and they always gave her the bed, so I slept with her, and we had a bed. But nah, it didn't make any difference to me. But anyway, I'll tell you why I slept with Miss Reeves, because she was afraid. But they, you know, and she didn't like the dogs, and the dogs had, which I was glad to have those dogs there. Miss Reeves don't like dogs, so they put her in a bedroom and where they could shut the door so the dogs couldn't go in, because she was scared to death of the dogs. And then she was afraid to be in the room by herself, so I'd stay in there with her. But anyway, I heard all the a lot of commotion, the dogs barking and everything, and I slept real sound. But and when I got up the next morning, they had a guard that stayed on duty all night there. And of course, like I say, the dogs made a lot of noise. And the next morning, when I got up, somebody had shot at their house. The shotgun went by in a car with a shotgun and just riddled and shot all the back out of the car that was, and the guard was in the car. Nobody was hurt. But boy, that was enough for me. Even Miss Revis was thinking about letting the dogs come in her room after that. But that was pretty common, too. There were a lot of attempts made at, well, there's always been attempts made on Cesar Chavez, but there were a lot of attempts made on the children, and like, say, with Helen, they kept a guard there all the time. That's why they moved to La Paz. It's really nice up there. They don't have all that much to worry about. You know, they have a guard at the gate. You can't get in unless you're identified, and they have a patrol. It's much safer. And then Caesar's house in there, it's all fenced. The gates are locked. You have to have, you know, permission. Somebody has to let you in to get inside. The part where they live, there's a lot of security there. I was very happy when they moved away from Delano, because there were a lot of incidents there, but that's the only one that I scared the hell out of me. When you get out there and see somebody go by there with a, just open up with a shotgun and spray the whole thing, just broke all the glass in that station wagon that was sitting there. I was so shook up, I didn't even look to see whether they did anything to my car. Now, that's how, they didn't bother mine. I was quite a ways up the street there, because there was a lot of cars parked there. But I never even thought to look at my car until somebody said, "Oh, Florida, what'd they do to yours?" I said, "Oh, God, I don't really care right now." It's a terrible thing to think of somebody shooting at you, trying to kill you, when, you know, for no reason. You certainly haven't harmed anybody. And, well, that's the way it goes, I guess.
You said that some of his children lived with you for a while.
They stayed. They never lived. They went a few weeks and then summer vacation. Because they, and then, too, they were going to the dentist here, and they used to stay. I used to go up and get them down, and they, Elizabeth had braces put on. That was a lot of trips to the dentist. And they stayed with us, and they stayed during the summer vacations. And they stayed for, you know, having problems up there. They stayed there. It's very nerve-wracking to feel, you know, that you send your kids to school, and you've got to worry about them. And that's very unnecessary for people, like I say, who never harmed anybody, mean only good for every place. Yeah, the three youngest ones I feel very close to. The older children, I'm not that, was never that well acquainted.
What kind of things work did you do with the farm?
Mostly hauling stuff, hauling supplies, I guess. I remember that's the thing I remember most. Going on marches. I'm very experienced there. Marching's my thing. I guess the most valuable thing I did was to haul those supplies. And of course, you know, go out and gather up and get donations and gather stuff and take it over. I think probably transportation was a big thing. At one time, they had a lot of, some of the farm workers were in UCLA for, I guess, different surgeries, different illnesses or something that they couldn't get treated over there. And I used to provide transportation for them, too, when they were released, and take them up there and sometimes go bring them over to me. And also, when they used to, all the, well, the, some of the farm workers, that I'm saying, oh, my God, that's millions of farm workers. Some of the farm workers there in Delano that needed dental attention used to get it here at Seminole. They were real good to the farm workers, and I used to go and get them, or sometimes they would come some other way, and then I would take them back, provide transportation. That's probably the only really actual work that I really did, was to provide transportation. I don't recall anything where they just couldn't be without me. They're wonderful people to work with, too, and I certainly enjoyed my involvement with, which becomes less and less since I came to CSO. I don't do much of anything but just, you know, work around the clock here. We seem to.
When did you come here?
1972. God, I hope I'm not wrong. came in 1970. I came to work as an employee in 1972. I had been, you know, with CSO as a member and as a volunteer for that time, but I've been working here since 1972. That sounds like I want to run in there and grab my